Well, hello, beautiful.
That's, for being like a year out, that's a lot. That's a tough way to start it.
That's a great way to start it.
All right. Hey, everybody. My name is Dan Ryan.
I'm Will Neuer.
We used to do a walleye fishing podcast. It was called Walleye Talk.
With Will and Dan.
Revolutionary stuff. 6-7 years ago.
It really was. Running 2D. Kind of looking at it sometimes.
Going just straight off gut instinct most of the time.
Oh, boy.
Praying for bites.
Hey, but you know what? Back then, the advantage we had is we were out there a lot. So we got to just fish through a bunch of really poor water to get to some mediocre water. And, We still fish those spots, and there's fish on them.
Yeah.
It just took us a long time to find them.
Mm-hmm. And it makes a lot more sense now with the tools we've got available, how we caught them back when we really didn't know how to catch them.
Yeah, and what we thought was the correlation why they were there, most of the time, is not a factor.
No.
You know? But
it's fun. That's part of the fun of fishing, though, is, the just pondering why they're doing what they're doing.
Yeah, the mystery of why I got bit here.
Yeah. And there's less mystery these days. Yeah. But it's not all gone.
Oh, no. Still a lot of wonder left there.
Yeah. If you're unfamiliar with the podcast, we did this weekly throughout the walleye season in Minnesota. We're in north central Minnesota near Leech Lake, and we used to do this every week. And we'd give updates on what's going on. We'd talk about goofy stuff. We had these weird hypotheticals.
That was a good time.
It was a lot of fun.
The what ifs.
Yep. We were young men back then, and we're not like we're old.
We drank a lot, though, which is probably why people liked this show.
Probably why we liked it so much.
They were like, I'm driving around. I can't be drinking. I might as well listen to some guys who are drinking.
These guys are for sure having a really good time.
And we were. It was good. But we're going to try and rectify it a little bit.
Yeah, we're doing, if you are familiar with the podcast, you probably know that we're doing a live event at Pikedale Lodge on this Saturday. It's going to be the 27th of April. And we're talking about Clearwater walleyes, sort of an update on the Longville area lakes. And we're using the Clearwater walleye thing as a way to address our whole region.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I think it's a good theme to talk about all the stuff that's relevant. And if you zoom way out and look at where we are in the walleye world, north central Minnesota, Clearwater is the defining part of it, right?
For sure. We're not very far from Shield Lakes. Nope. And, we're not very far from Dirty Lakes.
Right. Or the reservoirs of North South Dakota.
Right.
What defines us is our Clearwater, I think.
Right.
So.
And it's getting clear for, and because of zebra mussels. And we're going to talk a little bit about that as well.
Right.
And we're going to go through it kind of month by month, and we're going to give a little rundown right here. We're going to give you a little practice shot.
Yep. So we're recording us talking through our presentation that'll be live on Saturday, because we're not smart enough to do it during the presentation. So this is our best effort at trying to appease everybody who can't be up at Pikedale on Saturday.
Yeah. So we're going to get right into it.
If you're unfamiliar, this voice is Dan Ryan's voice. I've been living in Longville for, 15 years-ish now, I think. Yep. And I've been guiding for, this will be my 12th season guiding. And yeah, moved up here from southern Minnesota, grew up coming up to the Longville area, moved up to the family cabin, started a guide business after a few years, and never looked back. Couldn't be happier with where I ended up in the world and what I do for work. Got a couple of boys and a wonderful wife, and I look forward to getting back in the boat pretty soon here.
My name is Will. I grew up in Federal Dam, which is a crow flies, is maybe 7 miles from Pikedale. I grew up fishing Leech Lake, but I didn't fish the Longville Lakes till I got older, got my own boat. Then I started fishing the Longville Lakes, had a lot of fun learning those. I'm still learning. Every time I go out, I'm learning while I go out there. I've been guiding. I think this is going to be my 9th season or 10th season, something like that. Full-time guide for this is my 4th season now. And we're getting better every year, seems like.
And for sure. We're lucky we fought, we're buddies. We're bros now. We were enemies at first.
Oh, yes.
Will didn't like the jigs I bought. I didn't like the look on Will's face. And then now my we're best friends.
Doesn't like that either.
And we're lucky enough that we get to both do it full time and we talk to each other every day. So we do have a little bit of a, like, Will and I talk all the time and bounce ideas off of each other. Part of the reason we were doing this event is because we like the idea of having a community of anglers that we get to talk to. Piketail is great for that. There's a lot of, like, really good sticks at Piketail.
For sure.
And once our guide season gets going, it is more challenging for us to, like, take time to chat and talk with everybody. That's part of the reason we gave up the doing the podcast regularly, is dad life and guiding was taking up too much. So this was an attempt to, like, reconnect with our fishing community
a little bit. Yeah, get face-to-face and shake some hands. And Dan's going to bring his boat down there during the monsoon. So if you wanted to go ride in a 2090 in a... You know, with a nice big wind and raining sideways, your opportunity will be there at 3:30.
Yep. There's always boats at the Muskie House if you want to walk through one under dry conditions. Yeah. But if you'd like an on-the-water opportunity, this was one pretty good opportunity, or one pretty good chance for me to offer that up. So it'll be in the harbor for a couple hours before our presentation. If anybody wants to walk through it, they can. And if you want to go for a ride, we can do that too. Bring your rain gear. I'm not apologizing for a windshield, but absence of
that's
windshield.
That's the whole point of having them, is it's advantageous for catching fish. It's just not as comfortable.
No. So we chose Piketail for a variety of reasons.
Mostly because they have a burger named after me.
Yeah. Yep. That's all. It all started with the burger.
Absolutely.
What's funny about us recording this is Will is sitting right next to me, and he hurt himself, and he can't even turn his head like 8 degrees to look me in the eyes. He's just side eyeing me.
So I got to contort my whole body.
He's bragging about this burger that he named after himself at Piketail, and he's just side eyeing me.
I didn't name it. It was named after me. You can't give yourself a nickname and then expect the whole world to use your nickname.
That sounds exactly like something you would do.
That is not something I would do. There's unwritten rules. I have this code. It's a very complex code.
Okay.
Well, that's something you just don't do.
We chose Piketail, like, to base our Leech Lake business out of, primarily because it's a great east side launch location. It's close to Longville, right? If Longville is your community up here, if, you know, you've got a place on Little Boy or Woman or wherever, and Longville is your community, Piketail is, like, the easiest, quickest way to get on the lake. And they've got a good launch, good harbor. That island gives them a big break from the wind, so even if it is blowing, you can, like, at least get your trip started under pretty good conditions.
Boy, and it's a very convenient place to go start catching fish.
For sure.
For a lot of times of the year, you drive 300 yards, and you are now catching walleyes, and a lot of times really high quality walleyes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you're going to pick especially spring, fall, just one spot to fish on the whole lake, you don't have to go very far from Piketail. Now, plenty of people make the mistake of only going there all of the time.
Yeah.
But a lot of times, if I made a mistake last spring, it was driving right by there to go try to find them somewhere else.
Because you were sick of staring at the same group of 1,000 walleyes. Because maybe 1,000's not quite enough
for
today.
That's stupid. That's stupid, people. I did it for 11 years, and that's still real stupid.
It's funny that you had just a banger year last year, and you're upset with yourself about driving by.
I can't even remember the good days. All I remember is the times I messed up. All right. They also, we mentioned Piketail's got a pretty great community of their two dock hands, Zach and Carl, are real good fishermen. They've got a younger dockhand named
Wyatt,
who's getting started. And those are the folks you're going to, like, interact with when you launch.
And they're super. They've got personality and they're professional. Mm-hmm. So it's really a treat when you've got a little bit extra time to sit there and, you know, get the fishing report from them. And, you know, there's some friendly banter.
For sure.
And you might lose some money to Carl.
Yeah. Be careful. Be careful. But Carl, they're both going to tell you when times are tough, and they're both going to tell you when times are good. That's the type of intel you want from your dock help. And then the people who fish out of there, who've got seasonal places there, it's like I'd put them up against anybody.
Without question.
some pretty good tournament anglers in there than the guys who are just out there all the time whooping on them.
It's a pretty special place.
Yep.
And that's why we go there.
Yeah, you want to surround yourself with good anglers if you want to be a good angler. Good food, full bar. And the owners, the Myers, are just like, honestly, real
good. About the best it gets.
Yep. Before we get all teary-eyed, we'll just move on.
So we're expanding, or we're going to talk about these Clearwater lakes because it's a growing, not necessarily an issue, but it's a growing topic. And we want to make sure that we help as many people as we can get walleyes in the boat. Whether that means, you know, fishing a woman, little boy, or staying right there on Leech Lake. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of topic to cover, and we're going to do our best to get through it.
Yeah. So we'll talk about the Longville area lakes in some detail. You know, we're lucky that we get to do a lot of trips on Leech. I think you and I are both pushing more trips to Leech than we did 5 years ago. But then there are days where it's nice to be on a small one.
We'll cover it later, but there's a lot of time where it's very nice to be on a little, yeah, on a little lake.
Yep. We'll take a look at Leech over the, you know, where it's at now, and then also take a look back at the last 10 years, because it's been a pretty interesting 10 years.
It's changing more and more, maybe not faster, but we're just noticing the changes more and more because we're just getting a little more aware.
Right.
So I think how we're going to do this is we're going to cover it month by month by month, you know, or section by section. That's how we categorized it, was by month, going through how we get walleyes into the boat. We're not going to talk a lot about electronics or whatnot. We're going to talk mostly about how we find them, how we catch them, and why we do it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, the way I've been thinking of it, like, one thing that's missing from this presentation is we have purposefully left out the tech part. Now, a lot of the observations that we've made about walleye behavior in clear water is made possible by the tech. You know, and that's probably the biggest shift, is that you really get to see what the fish are doing from a distance when you'd have to kind of guess more before. But we're not going to specifically address it because, for one, there's a million guys out there who are covering that topic. And to be honest, most of them are like pros with the forward facing sonar. We use it a lot, but I would not consider us to be like top tier forward facing sonar folks.
Right. Gets put down, it gets used.
Yeah, but use it every
day.
There's
a lot to learn.
Yeah. And then, we're going to leave time for questions for those of you who are going to attend in person. So we've got a lot of lakes around here that we get to fish. You know, Leech is 120,000 acres, and then the smaller ones we fish regularly are 1,000. And we're pretty lucky to call this place home. It's a angler's paradise and a walleye fisherman, like, can't complain.
For sure.
Certainly plenty of good places to call home if you're a walleye angler, but this is a real nice one. We'll talk a little bit about the Woman Lake chain. We'll talk about Little Boy and Wabedo. Hit on Winnie just a little bit. That's probably where we know the least. Except that we, you know,
we're, hearsay.
Yeah, we're in the like angling community around here, and Winnie gets a lot of talk these days. And then just there's a lot of little lakes around here that we don't, and maybe purposefully over the last few years, have avoided touching those ones.
And ones that we're going to fish less this year and more next year. You know, they're all fairly cyclical.
Right.
And, you know, they don't get a lot of attention. And maybe this year they'll get the attention they deserve.
Mm-hmm. Woman is a 5,000 acre lake, and it's always been a clear water lake.
I would say that's our clearest lake around here.
Yep. And recently has gotten zebes and is getting clearer, so that'll only be a more pronounced adjustment that you have to make. But it's almost like, man, we're kind of used to fishing, to dealing with clear water problems out there already. It just doesn't seem like a huge adjustment that we're gonna.
Yeah. There's some subtle changes that happen with the zebra mussels, and you know we're just getting more and more used to it, so we're going to continue to evolve and and find patterns that this kind of clear water makes emerge.
Yeah. There are times when I pick woman to fish Like if people say, hey, take me where you want to go. There are times of the year where woman is where I pick. And then we're out there a lot because there are people who are on the lake. That's mm-hmm. what drives our business out there is it's a
lots of resorts, lake. Lots of places to stay.
Yeah. So. In like the Keystone Lake of the region besides Leech, you know?
Yeah, it's the chain is on, I mean, the chain is in Longville. Mm-hmm. It starts on, Girl Lake is right there.
Right. Real healthy walleye fishery, real healthy smallmouth fishery, excellent pan fishing.
But big gators.
Big gators. Like high quality gators.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, as big around as they are long. Another couple lakes that we fish, especially seems like once we get in more into June, we fish Little Boy and Wabato a lot more. And they're staples in the Longville area, not just for walleye fishing, but there's awesome muskie fishing there too. So it's a good resource to have in our back pocket.
For sure.
Whether, you know, if we're specifically going out there just to go fish walleyes or if it's weather related, it's great to have those around.
Mm-hmm. Those two have been examples over the last like 10, 15 years too of definitely cycling for us, right? Yeah. They're both about 1,000 acres, 1,200 acres, and they both had some really sweet peaks.
Oh, yeah.
And then we've also seen them drop a little bit. You know, all of this is anecdotal. It's just through the lens of you and I, but there's... We get a good look at them each year. You know, we probably get 20, 30 looks at them right. between the two of us each year. And some years they're up, some years they're down. We did have that great opportunity to watch 1 year class.
It was a monster year class.
Yeah. Yep.
When we got on there, when we started, they were 14, 15 inchers. Mm-hmm. And we caught the bejeebus out of them.
Mm-hmm.
And we watched them. Now there's a slot out there, 18 to 26. And now they're 19 inchers.
Yeah.
Which is awesome to still catch them.
For sure. Yep. And like, I think it's an example of, let's see if the slot works, right? You're going to have a bunch of breeders. That was a pretty good year class. Let's see if they can get some natural reproduction going. I don't know if they will, but like, for sure they made,
they got have a one. Chance.
They have a chance. Yep. And then the other one that's pretty much like more in our back door than we realize is Winnebagoche. It's, you know, from Longville. What's it take you? 30 minutes to get to a launch on the south yep. side of the lake. And it's a pretty good lake, pretty famous walleye fishery, and has had nothing but an impeccable record for the last, 5 years at least?
Right, right. Not just with walleye fishing, but nice perch, and it also has really nice pike in it, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something we underutilize.
Right. And it was like, if I have a regret about the early part of my career, when I had more time to run around and fish by myself, it'd be to like right. learn Winnie. So if you're in that situation where you got some freedom to run around, don't write Winnie off, especially if you run into a time where you're feeling like Leech is
right.
struggling.
Or you're struggling out there, you mm-hmm. know. It's supposedly, if you talk to Austin, it's a good slump buster.
Sure.
You'll just go out there and yeah. whoop on him. Especially if you're learning about your graphs and stuff, it's such a target-rich environment. And why not go do it?
Friendly graphing.
Yeah.
And they've been dealing with Zeebs for, 15 years?
Yep.
And they seem to be doing just fine.
Just fine. Just fine.
Yeah.
So we're going to transition from Winnie back down south to Leech here. We're in a pretty good place here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of fish, and our size structure is maybe changing too a little bit.
For sure.
And we are very heavy on the eater fish right now.
Yeah.
And it's a treat we haven't necessarily had maybe the last 10 years. We haven't been able to have this easy of a time filling the box.
Yeah.
As compared to, you know, like 5 years ago, there was a lot of days we caught 25 fish and they were all 4-pounders.
Yeah. You didn't get to put a whole lot in the live well. And those were good. Those were fine days too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Now it feels like you can be thoughtful about trying to catch some nice ones and you can be thoughtful about trying to catch some keepers. And so you... At least, it used to be like, man, they're definitely separated. Buy a keeper. I cannot buy a keeper.
Right.
Which is a funny problem to have as a fishing guide.
But yeah. it wasn't like just a kind of every once a week problem. It was an everyday problem.
Yeah.
Seemed like.
Yeah.
And you would have to catch just a pile to get 5 in the box.
Mm-hmm.
Which was, I mean, it's fun setting the hook on a fish that doesn't move over and over and over again.
Yeah.
But now we're in a pretty sweet spot here.
Mm-hmm. And we should point out that 5 years ago or 7 years ago, that was looking at a much smaller portion of the lake to fish than we now cover. Yeah. You know, that was Pikedale, within 5 miles of Pikedale, yeah. Right? Yep. And there was just a lot of, like, slot fish in those regions of the lake. And that wasn't necessarily true in Walker Bay. That wasn't necessarily true up in the North Bays, but it was certainly true for us. And now we've seen the shift all across the region.
Across the board.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But we're seeing, like, huge schools of keeper walleye.
Gigantic. Yeah. And that was more apparent last fall than, I think, well, last summer, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, it started, we watched those fish grow from July to October.
Mm-hmm.
It was really, amazing. Yeah. And I'm just really happy that we've got Leech Lake in a shape that we want it, that's advantageous to us.
Yep.
To everybody, not just us.
Right.
When you've got that many fish out there, you're going to run into them.
Mm-hmm.
You're just going to run into them.
And I'm sure there'll be some hiccups in the next 10 years. But if you look at what we've gone through with changes, we've gone from an 18 to 26 inch slot to a 20 to 26 inch slot to a 1 over 20.
Four fish limit,
1 over 20. Zebra mussels. Like, there's just a lot going on out there. And we have landed in a spot where the lake is sitting pretty good. Yeah. I would guess that you'll probably see some ups and downs with the way things go in the next 10 years. But right now, no complaints.
Yeah, we will ride this one out as long as we can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the main topic, Clearwater walleyes, is relevant for the small lakes for sure as well. And then it's certainly playing a large role in how we fish Leech. And what fish are doing. I think a lot of their behavior is driven somewhat by clear water. And then, like, your tactics, a lot of the tactics we're using to catch them, which is what we're going to try to focus on, right? Like, yeah. Where and how to catch them. Those tactics all you could look at as, like, an adaptation to dealing with clear water.
Yeah, it's never mind. Go ahead.
Well, like, so zebra mussels get blamed for clearing water, and they certainly have that impact, right? They certainly have that effect. I'm not as doomsday about the outcome of the fishery. I think, like, the fish populations can stay stable. If you look at Cass, if you look at Winnie, those lakes have been dealing with it for a long time, and they're doing fine. But how you're getting at the fish is changing.
Yeah, it also changes. It changes the nature of the lake itself. It changes their feeding habits. It changes, you know, where they sit. And maybe it hasn't, but we now believe it does.
Yeah. Either way, this is where the hard part, because it's an interesting parallel with the clear water problem only getting worse and the new technology letting you see so far, mm-hmm. that you don't know. Like, maybe they were always up there, right? Maybe they were always spooking from the boat, but you didn't know without the ability to
see,
to look ahead.
Yep.
And now we can, and a lot of it is pretty pronounced. Like, wow, they do some goofy stuff.
Uh-huh.
And, like, a real, we'll hit on this in great detail, but there are going to be walleyes in under 10 feet of water every day of the open water season, and good numbers of them, and they don't care if it's dead calm and clear, they're still going to be up there.
Yep.
They're going to be up, doesn't mean they're going to bite, but they're going to be up there. And we used to not think that was a thing.
For sure.
So we're learning, too.
So we'll start with what's coming up next, right? We got May just around the corner. Mm-hmm. Opening day is like 2 weeks away. Pretty close. And we're going to go through what kind of, how we catch them, like, from opening day on. And we'll kind of specifically talk this year with an early ice out date, how our thought process changes compared to a late ice out year. And then how the weather affects where we find them. And how we approach catching them. You know, my big thing in May is catching them on jig and a minnow. Like, if there's anything I hang my hat on in this world, I love my kids, but it doesn't hold a candle to how I jig a minnow. All right? Those two kids of mine, they look exactly like me. But until they can jig a minnow just like me, I don't know if I'm going to claim, other than my taxes. I'll claim them on my taxes. All right? But other than that, I might tuck them in at night. But other than that, until they can jig a minnow, a June bug jig, and minnow, and maybe I'll claim them. But it's I like it a lot.
Yeah,
I like it a lot. And the way I go about it, so let's say it's opening day, I'm out there. It's 7 o'clock. It's a little busy. Big thing I'm doing is I'm driving shallow sand. And like this year, I'm expecting them to be shallower than usual because water is going to be past that, you know, 50 degrees. We're not going to be dealing with low 40 temperatures.
Yeah. And like the early morning cold thing that we think of in the spring, you know, if you've got temps that are, the surface temps are that are floating around in the 40s based on like the daily temperatures, right? If you get a cold morning, then I bet they're not super happy to be in 4 feet of water today.
Right. They're going to be looking for that warmer water, right, which is going to be out, you know, closer to your break
line. But your point is that might not be the case this year.
I think they'll be, as soon as we wake up, they're going to be, you know, like where I'm going to be looking is on bulrush edges. And they're going to be overlapped with some perch too, which is a great bonus. But I'm going to be using my side image, looking for schools of fish. And then I'm going to be pitching a jig and a minnow, and I'm going to be using a quarter ounce jig because in that skinny of water, looking at, you know, less than 6 feet of water, I'm going to be casting at them and I want to cast a greater distance. So that quarter ounce jig will effectively give you an extra third on your cast length, which could mean the difference between catching 4 fish and 15 fish.
Yeah.
Because you're in that skinny water, you also are way more prone to spooking them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to spook them. I just want to spook them into the live well.
Yeah. Yeah. Distance is important. And like, again, that would go to our overall theme, right? That the whole idea is that clear water is, they're more aware of you than we used to think. And so casting distance is one way to, there's got to be something about that quarter ounce or like dredging in the sand too, you know, like, because you don't always want to be swimming it in the spring. Like an eighth ouncer, you'd maybe be
letting it float a little bit more.
Yep, like trying to keep it in what you think is the strike zone a lot. And I also think that, and I'm guilty of it too, if you're going light, you probably spend more time than you realize out of the strike zone.
Right, when not letting it rest.
Yep. And if you get any sort of wind bow in your line, or you know, if you're dealing with problems, you're concerned about feel for where your bait is at, That could be why. And the spring is not the time where you're going to expect fish to come up
right
3-4 feet to eat. I think you want them. You want
good. They're going to be content, related to the bottom. A lot of times you're dealing with, they're willing to bite, but I think a lot of times they're fairly lethargic. Even the bites you get are not like the boom bites, you know? It's like they picked it up off the bottom.
Mm.
So if you're dealing with bites that are feel like they're picking them off the bottom, well, why not spend more time letting them pick it up off the bottom?
Right, yeah.
I mean, that's just my logic on it. And
yep. Generally, you're dealing with pretty good conditions for doing that too, right? There's not a lot of vegetation growth. You're not going to have a dirty jig all the time.
And even the vegetation you are dealing with, a lot of times it's caragrass and it's dead caragrass. And you could break that. That stuff's pretty brittle.
Yeah,
so you pull through it fairly easily.
With your bait looking fine.
Right.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, and you have bigger sand pockets then too. So, and that's, I mean, most of the time, on as long as the water's warm enough, I'm dealing with sand. If you've got real crystal clear sunny days, then I'm going to go past the break line a lot sometimes. If it's in that 15 foot, and I'm going to look for maybe a soft bottom transition on the outside of a break line, but it's going to all still be shoreline structures and it's not going to be very far from the shallow water.
Mm-hmm.
We often refer to, you know, these break lines that are close to deep water. Well, they also do the same thing on the shallow side too, I think, in the spring, is they want to be near that shallow water because once they get, if they need to warm up, they want to get into that shallow water and get their bodies feeling a little better too. So,
yeah.
And that's where the shiners are going to spawn. That's where the minnows are. They're, a lot of times they're going to be on shallow too. So,
Yeah, I think one misconception is like if you're up shallow and not getting bites or whatever, and then like what you're, I think you are maybe you are picking different fish to pick on based on the conditions. And maybe there'll be more of them out there. Maybe it's a numbers thing, but maybe it's also like, man, I cannot get those 6 foot fish to bite, right? For whatever reason. And finding a group that's doing something different is going to make a difference. The wind-driven location thing, I think, is real important in the spring, too. It probably doesn't get touched on enough because you're also moving warmer water with the wind, mm-hmm. typically, in the spring. Not to say you won't find them. You know, if there's a fishy spot, there's probably going to be some fish in there. But if you're looking for bite windows and you're looking for aggressive fish, warm water with the wind blowing is
huge.
Huge in the spring.
Huge.
Mm-hmm.
And we're drifting less and less, even on these windier days. If it's clear, if you've got a sunny sky and it's, you know, fairly windy, you still have to keep that in the back of your mind that maybe I can't just drift over the, if you get a couple bites and the bites stop, maybe you've got to go kind of bass fishing for them, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
If you don't have the, you know, the forward facing sonar or good sign of it, you might have to just go pitch onto these sandy break lines or sandy. A lot of times on these big wind days too, they're not sitting wicked shallow. A lot of times they'll be kind of more hugging the break line edge. So you have an opportunity there to narrow your window a little bit. It's worth keeping in the back of your mind though. If it's cloudy, it's a lot less of a hassle. If it's cloudy and windy, you can float over them more often than you can't.
Yeah. And I don't think there's more days where it falls somewhere on the spectrum, right? Where like maybe you're drifting a break line or drifting a flat that you fish every spring, mm-hmm. right? And the first drift, you catch three of them, right? Like, okay, it's working fine. We've got an 8-mile-an-hour wind. It's mostly sunny, but they seem to be fine with it. Well, like maybe you don't get it. You know, maybe you catch one on the next drift and then nothing on the next drift and nothing on the next drift. Like, geez, what happened? Did these fish move? Like it's probably more like, if you change your approach, you're just going to improve by a percentage, right? Not right. like a day maker or day breaker. Like right. we couldn't catch any fish drifting. Well, maybe you could catch 5 drifting, but you could catch 15 if you were pitching at them.
Right.
Right. Like just trying to do things as best you can all day long. I don't think like the drift is always going to be, it's going to be gone, but
for sure.
Just
there's a time and a place for it though.
For sure. And you're talking to a couple dudes who really like to drift because we got lots of lines out.
It makes our lives a lot easier when you can just throw it over the side, you know, make a nice long cast and, mm-hmm. and float along.
Right. I think you hit on everything I'd want to say about May. You know, there's going to be some fish using the rocks if conditions are right, but more and more for us, we just spend so much more time in sand or on edges along the rock. It's hard to be in the rocks because you feel like you're fishing blind these days.
You are, but it also seems like they're using them less and less.
Yeah.
Which, if you talk to guys who fish Mille Lacs a lot, they'll say the same thing as they use the walleyes use the rocks less and less and mm-hmm. less.
When our solid rock season is June. Let's just move on to June.
Let's do it.
That is our rock season. What's different, though, is that the fish use them differently than I thought a wall like
for
I,
sure that turns out these rock humps have edges
yeah
turns out
early June is probably my favorite time to fish on leech, and things can just be so good out there. The reason I really like it though is because you do have options. You don't have just like one pattern. Like in the spring and the fall, you have one really strong pattern with lots and lots of fish doing mm-hmm. doing the same thing, which means you're going to be around a bunch of them. That's great. I like that in the spring and the fall. In June, you have fish using offshore rock humps. You have fish still using wind-driven shorelines. You have fish using like scattered rock and sand transition mm-hmm. areas. You have a lot of opportunities to catch them from 3 feet of water to 25 feet of water.
And you'll often do that in the same day.
Yeah,
you
for
will
sure.
often start fishing 3 foot and end up fishing 28 foot.
Yep, yep.
It's just very common.
And your sequencing of your days, often if you maybe the day before you got them really good on some rock humps, right? And you fished the midday hours and did real good there. Like, well, we'll just get up early and start there right away tomorrow morning. That's not always the right decision to make. There are fish that are more susceptible. There are better bites for early morning than there are midday. And so, like, while it's a time of opportunity, it can also feel like you can end up making poor decisions as well. Because when you have all those opportunities, you know, it's like chasing shiny objects. They're all over the place.
For sure. And if they're not ready to bite, they're not, especially out on those humps, they're not ready to bite.
Mm-hmm. And you'd think, like, the conditions are perfect. Water temp's 64 degrees, got a little bit of a chop.
You hit plenty warm out here.
Sorry, they're not always going to bite even when conditions are perfect. Somewhere on that lake, somewhere in the corner by Pikedale, they're going really good.
For sure.
But sometimes you can be chasing the wrong ones at the wrong time.
Yeah, maybe you just got to call them at 9 o'clock instead of 7 o'clock.
Yeah. And then I do think I give this time of the year credit for helping us hone new skills a lot, both of us. Last year in early June, you were fishing a drop shot. Way back when, early June is when I started fishing bobbers. Mm-hmm. Like, that's when you have real susceptible fish, that's the opportunity to, like, to either finely tune a presentation you're not good with or to just try a new one.
Right. And they're very willing to bite certain things.
Yeah.
So it's a great time to go out and play. And if you've got, you know, the nice thing about this part of June is they're very willing to bite and the weather's really nice. So it's a great time to get kids out too.
Yeah. Just and, to exist. It's Leech Lake in early June is a great place to exist.
For sure. For sure. Then after that, we go to late June. And this is where things get a little bit, they get pretty tough out on Leech.
It's the toughest 2 weeks of the year. The last week of June and first week of July, I think, is right. The toughest.
We're dealing with the most available food in most ecosystem, especially a Leech. Is in that period, the most food period. You've got tons of mayflies emerging from the mud, and those fish are gorging on them. So I kind of get the heck out of there when it starts getting a little tough like that. Mm-hmm. We start going fishing more of our little boys' wabbitos and woman lakes because they don't follow the same, but they're about a week behind when it comes to the bugs. So
yeah.
If we can sneak in another week of real good walleye fishing, which it is very good walleye fishing on those lakes during that time, we take full advantage of that.
Right.
And it's pretty great. And we're doing more summertime patterns, especially on Leech. We're doing more spinners, more corking, more lindy rigging, everything more summertime.
Mm-hmm.
But once we move over to those little lakes,
Minnows.
You get to go back, right to, back minnows. To minnows. Even if it's hot out, them suckers are in there and they're eating them. And I don't know what it is, but I'm sure happy that they do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from our perspective, if you can bridge a little gap from the bug hatch on June, on Leech, which is usually like right around the 18th of June, it'll be interesting to see what happens this year. Because we have, everybody's concerned, like, we're going to pay for this early ice out somewhere.
Yeah, but you were just out there. It was 42 degree water temperature.
I'm not one of the concerned ones. I don't think an early ice out hurts us at all. At all. I think if anything, especially in the like Pikedale corner, it helps opening week, and I don't think it changes the bug hatch much. Maybe I'll be wrong, but that's what I think. I think early ice out is only good news for us.
I think June temperatures affect it, if anything's going to affect it.
Right, yeah. But yeah, if we can like dodge Leech for just a little bit.
Just until them bugs go away. Yep. Wait till all the resorts, them poor resorts get done raking their beaches.
Yep. And then back after the 4th, we were on a great summer pattern that we stuck on for most of July and August. We'll get to that in a second. But you're right. It's a great time to lake hop and probably a good time. I imagine Winnie has a bug hatch similar to similar timing to Leech. But I don't hear him complain as much. Maybe that's the grass is always greener. But I wonder about what Winnie would be like then last week of June. Some year we'll find out.
Maybe.
This slide, the first thing Will wrote on this slide is July might suck less than we first thought.
That's only because we had a banger July last year.
And it got started pretty quick after the 4th. Like after things sort of settled down from the bugs and things were pretty good. And this pattern for us happened to be a shallow water pattern. It's not the only thing out there, but there's, and I guess I should say you had some deeper stuff going.
I had one deeper spot going.
But I thought that was later July too, wasn't it?
I had a July 3rd trip that was mediocre. And then immediately after that, it was pretty good.
Okay. Gotcha. Well, a lot of my fish were shallow weed related fish.
I also was on those. I was also doing that too.
Right.
So,
yeah, July is not as bad. I think what can be frustrating about July, I was fishing primarily weeds in under 12 feet of water, and it was not an easy, there were not easy fish to find. Like I took a day off and I spent a whole day looking for a pattern like this and found it, and then it made hay for us for a while.
Very long
while. You expanded off of that with similar stuff, you know, on a different
There's region. There's miles of this shoreline, and I just was able to drive it a little further.
Right. Yep. But those fish aren't always going to bite. It's also a time of day thing. You know, the early morning stuff is going to matter quite a bit. You have to accept that one group of 20 fish you might get a bite or two off of, and then you got to move. You know, it's I think we're happy to have that pattern, but it is the normal struggles that go with walleye fishing still exist, right?
For sure.
Finicky fish, condition-based, and that habitat, it's just...
It's difficult to fish... It's difficult just to get a clean bait through there a lot of times.
Yeah.
Especially if you're not precise.
Yeah. Your options are a little limited. Obviously, a bobber is going to play a big role anytime you're talking about a dirty bottom. But your options are certainly limited. And you have fish that are finicky. So it's a problem I'm, like, looking forward to working on more. Mm-hmm. You know, I've never been, like, really excited for July in April, but I'm all right with it.
Yeah, if it means we're going to go look at that many fish in that small of an area, I'm all about it.
Right.
I did something a little bit different this period, and it's something I'm still working on, but I have tough times sometimes fishing bobbers if they don't just immediately get bit.
Mm-hmm.
I hate it. I don't like staring at bobbers. It's not my thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been working hard to try and not fish a bobber.
Yeah.
So my best solution so far that I found is to cast spinner rigs and pull through them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll use like a sliding weight, and then a, whatever the 5 foot, you know, Secret Lake tackle. Yeah. They come in 5 or 6 footers,
six footers.
And I'll see them on my side image. I'll cast over to them, you know, let it hit the bottom and then drag through them. And that has been my number one way to catch them, and especially in this period, in the shallow water. And it could just be we're not dealing with super big fish, because it's not a good way to catch big fish,
mm-mm,
but it's an awesome way to whack them and stack them.
Sure.
And you can fish them fast. You don't have to be real precise. I can play whack-a-mole. And
yeah, there's some serious advantages to that, like a mistake or if I'm critiquing myself from last year, it's that the bobber thing is great, but it's a lot of work, and it is condition driven. So there are days where it's very, very difficult to get that bait looking right. And I have one day in particular where I'm like, I have made a mistake, and I was leaning too hard into the bobber thing working, and the conditions did not line up, and you whooped them pulling spinners. And it was just like, God, why? Why wouldn't I have thought of doing that? Because you'd been talking about this program for a while. But old dog, new tricks, hey, something like that.
Sometimes, you know, you come up in the old Portage Bay. Especially when I'm around, you're going to get Portage Bay every now and then. It's like whenever I go fish by you on Woman Lake, I'm going to get some, you know, I'm going to get my butt whooped every now and then.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But gets dragged in this year.
That's right.
It is a good technique, and you can do it in rough stuff too, that's, you know.
Kind of where it kind of started, mm-hmm, is you could see them, but you couldn't stay on them.
Yeah.
And, well, let's just fling this thing over there. Well, wouldn't you know, but it's been good, and it's going to continue to be good.
Yeah,
I'm going
to
keep
so.
Developing it.
Yeah.
See how deep I can do this program.
Do you mean like literally deep?
Like
40 foot of water, 50 feet, 60 feet of water.
What are we doing? I was talking more like I was thinking more of a philosophical.
Oh,
like going deep into the,
like you're gonna get
into the well.
You're gonna get a Secret Lake tackle tattoo, is what you're gonna do
on my neck.
Oh, I was thinking butt cheek, but neck is good too.
There's no O's.
Too much. If you didn't get that, maybe rewind. It's pretty good.
Then we move to August. August doesn't always mean deep water. I think back in the past, we used to think that, you know, August is probably the warmest water temperature, at least in the beginning part, and that we always just kind of focused on deep water.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it doesn't necessarily mean that anymore.
No.
It does mean we're going to have big minnows in the boat, though.
Yeah.
Because there are some deep fish that we like to target.
Yeah. Now, it's funny how it's flip-flop, dude. It's like, it's, I feel like it's a luxury to have deeper break line fish. Like, yeah. Some days you're out there, like, all I have is walleyes in 9 feet of water now. And I don't want to do that all the time. Mm-mm. They're a pain in the butt.
And we've been staring at these probably same schools of fish for since June.
Yeah.
Maybe they just need a break. Mm-hmm.
Right. Not have a leech floating around in front of their face. Right. Yeah.
And this is a great time of year, too, to get some picture fish, not just of walleyes, but smallmouths. Mm-hmm. They are best buddies, it seems like. Their schools are mixed right together, and you don't know what you're going to catch.
We should clarify, though, like that doesn't, this is not a leech thing so much, right? Like,
right. This is a small lake.
Yeah. August is a month where we're definitely on the smaller ones a fair amount. Again, that's driven sometimes just by business, but mm-hmm. It's also it's a good time to be on them, you know? Late June and, like, early to mid-August, both of those are pretty good times to be out and about.
Yeah, we're not just fishing the weed edges. We're fishing humps and we're fishing saddles, and it's a good variety of, you can find fish from A to Z. Mm-hmm. Now, there's not typically a lot of fish on every spot, but, you know, you drive 15 spots, you're going to see a couple of real good schools that you could spend some time on.
Right.
And, you know, the one thing that we haven't talked on is we don't really linear rig that much. No. Anymore. And this is the month maybe we do it the most.
For sure. Yep. Yep.
Maybe we start doing it here. And it seems like they're more willing to they're not going to be so spooky going over the top of them. Mm. Where in especially June and early July, they are super spooky and
yeah.
Better not even dare.
Right. Yeah. And I don't know what that is, what's driving that behavior. You know, some of it is just depth. You know, if you're in 16 to 25 feet, you're less likely to bump them.
More cover.
Some of it's probably pressure, right? If you're fishing these smaller lakes and you find a pack of like 20 walleyes using a little weird inside turn or something, there's a good chance they haven't been fished yet, mm-hmm. You know, or at least fished in that way in that spot. And so rigging definitely plays a bigger role. And when you're fishing the smaller lakes, it's not like you're dealing with a fish count of like 30, right? Like a good day in August for us for fishing a small lake. Like we caught 7 walleyes, gave up on it at about 9 o'clock and then went and did something else for a little while. Like we're not talking about like huge numbers, but seven is pretty fun for a couple hours on a 1,000-acre lake. And you're going to get one that somebody's going to be proud to take a picture with too.
Right.
That's like more likely than not, if you're going to catch 7, you're going to get a nice one on these smaller Longville lakes. In the like leech world, this is when the crankbait guys really start to shine.
Looking at you, Schultzy.
Yep. And there are some good crankbait fishermen around here. I admire it about you quite a bit. I pulled cranks like, I don't know, 6 times last year. And it worked, I think, 4 out of the 6 times I did it, you know. But sometimes it's hard to get, again, it's not like my strongest tool. So I don't like use it as often as I probably should.
What generally happens is we'll drive past the crankbait area, another 6 miles to go catch them where you don't have to crankbait them. Yeah.
Yeah. But I've been trying to be more flexible and you like prep for it as your backup plan, right? Like say you've got, go do something what you consider to be fun for 2.5 hours and then pull cranks for a few hours, right?
Yeah.
Well, last year those crankbait guys did real
they
well for a long time, and for through a huge region of that, like north of the Pelican region of the lake, like they covered a lot of water and did well for huge stretches.
It just shows how healthy the fishery is, right? Yeah.
I think so. At least over by us. All right, we're moving on to September, and we split September in half as well. Any month that we felt like had a big transition, we split up. So early September sure feels like summer around here the last few years, and the fish respond accordingly. I think the pattern, like if you get on a decent pattern of where the fish are in August, that pattern will hold true, and then fishing's just going to get better, mm-hmm. right? Like if you get a water temp drop at all, and even just the shorter days, I think, starts to get to them. And that July pattern will hold true in August, and the fish will just be a little bit more cooperative. At least that's my take on what I can remember from last year.
He was an embarrassing amount of Nightcrawlers during this stretch. We're pretty pumped when we get two bites on a red tail or a rainbow. Yeah. We're like, dude, I caught two of them. Caught two of them rigging a rainbow today.
Yeah.
And we're like, why do you even have one on?
My customers caught 16, but I caught two on a minnow.
The minnow kicked, and then that fish was like, chomp. And it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
When really, you should just using half crawler.
For sure. Creature baits are still good. Yeah. And for the most part, the location is about the same. You know, there's maybe more shifting to the break line stuff, which, again, often feels good to have that as an option, have fish on the break lines. And then I do think September, as soon as you start dealing with shoulder season months, they're going to look different year to year, because shoulder seasons change more year to year than your midsummer months do. So,
and during this stretch, we're spending the most of our time on Woman Lake.
Yeah.
I mean, just because that's where our customer base is there, that little stretch.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a heck of a run this early September on Leech.
Mm-hmm.
A couple people out of Pikedale, in fact. And, that was dealing with deep water fish that were, I think, getting off of one structure heading to shorelines.
Mm.
Maybe.
Sure.
Which I have no idea. I'm just guessing.
Yeah,
here.
We still do a lot of guessing. One, the way I've started to think about walleye behavior has shifted a little bit. And it was a term that Dylan Mackey used when we interviewed him like 4 years ago. He was talking about a Lake Vermilion tournament that they won. And he used the term loafing. It was a loafing location for walleyes. And I think that's a really good way to think about what they do. They don't just exist all the time in a state where they want to be eaten. But they have to exist all the time somewhere.
Right.
And they do, I think their needs are different, right? They want to be comfortable. They don't want to be burning energy. But they spend good chunks of the day loafing. They're sitting on their couch, right?
Yep.
And those fish, there are techniques to catch them. But you should recognize that habit, what they're doing. They are loafing. They don't want to eat. We might get some of them to bite, but they are not here hunting.
The most neutral they can be.
Mm-hmm. And you can even see it in their placement in the water column. You know, they're not in a hunting position. They're loafing at a level in the water column where they find it to be most comfortable. And that's just a good observation that, again, like, I wouldn't know that if it wasn't for the tech, right? Yeah. But that's what they do. And you can see your stuff sit right in them, and they don't always bite, but...
Big Steve says, we're in a staring contest, and we're not going to win. We could do the staring contest all day, and we're just not going to win.
That's a pretty good line.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, the second half of September, for us, like, a good marker is we go fish that Cass Lake MWC. We're away from home for 3-4 days, you know, from our home waters, fishing that. And then when we come back, it's like,
let's look for some fall stuff.
Let's do fall stuff now.
And it doesn't usually work for another week, but we always try it. You know, traditionally fall meant, okay, let's go drift shallow rock points. And it's just not always, the right decision.
No.
I mean, when the weather says yes, it is the right decision.
Yeah.
But anymore, we find ourselves fishing more and more sand. Or finding greener weeds and trying to figure it out that way. I know I only had maybe 2-3 good rock days.
I had none. I had 0 rock days last year in the fall.
And if you told Dan Ryan that 3 years ago, 5 years ago, he would have keeled over and been, oh, Lordy. Yeah. What did
I had 2 good rock days, but they were at the very end of October when people were like done fishing.
Right.
Which is maybe, you know, that's maybe informative. Maybe it is just shifting later, but it's a combination of doing it less and then the pattern being weaker, I think.
Right.
But man, if you have a good memory of like the wind ripping in your face as you're drifting Ginzers and you whooped them on September 25th, and then you're up there on September 25th and the wind is ripping. Like, I'm not saying don't try it.
For sure. And we're going to be there too when the conditions... This last fall, we just did not have very good conditions for them to be rocky until late in the season.
Yeah. Yeah. And the one day we both gave it a good, we gave it the best shot we could. We had customers who were pretty forgiving. Like, they gave us some time to do something different because we'd done so well the day before. And we did, like, the milk run of rock stuff, two boats covering.
Well, we kind of knew it when we were driving out there. Mm-hmm. We're gonna have to beat these boys up a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's worth trying because it's like, what if that doesn't even exist in 10 years, right?
Yeah.
I don't think it'll ever go away completely, but we certainly used to do more of it. So for when sure. you get to do it, you got to jump on it. It's just less days to do it.
October. Now, this is, so end of September is when it starts. October is fall.
I remember last year you posted, you were on Facebook, you're like, I have October 4th and 5th open. And you didn't say this, but you were essentially like saying, that's ridiculous. Somebody needs to go fishing on October 4th or 5th with me. And you booked them like that day.
I did book them that day.
But those, yeah, that was a good point to make. They're too good of days to not be out there.
I'm not like, this is just, I'm not trying to brag. I am bragging because, you know, I'm that guy. But I don't think I had a day in October we didn't have a full box. Bags,
yeah.
And, like, you could say that about June a lot of times, but, like, that for sure happened in October.
Right.
And it just, it's a testament to the health of the fishery, for number one, but how willing they are to bite, you know, in that October period. And we had some, my best day came on October 1st last year, and I ran out of minnows twice. Luckily, you bailed me out. But, like, it was a warming period in October.
Cold. It was not cold at all.
It was really.
The high was like 73 degrees that day.
It had no business beating on them, and then we stinking beat on
but
them.
It was like ideal. Like the water temp got to where it needed to be, and then we just had great weather through the first
wind,
half of
and
fall.
The wind blew.
And the wind blew.
But it was really a good. We fished a lot of the same stretch of shoreline. But we followed the wind. That's what we had to do, which was not conducive for the rocks, but it was conducive for another area that we are able to fish. We fished mostly sand this year, which is great because then you could side image them and pick off these big schools of fish, mm-hmm. at least get opportunities to pitch into big schools of fish that were willing to bite.
Yeah. A lot of the more I think of it, like a lot of our mornings would start in like 4 to 7 feet of water pitching at them, right? Mm-hmm. And I think even if you don't know a whole lot about clear water walleyes, you would know not to be, you wouldn't want to drift over them with a light wind in that depth, right? But then the wind would build throughout the morning and those shallow fish would maybe stop biting, or maybe you would just be like, all right, we're good. We got our boxes full. Let's go do something else. And then you could do that primary break line, drift, right? Where you're right. drifting in 11 to 14 feet of water.
Well, I think too, with when you've got those bigger winds, like that, they tend to want to use the brake line more. Mm-hmm. As compared to like when it's calm, I don't think they like being on the brake lines, but I think they like being up shallow. And when you've got a real heavy wind, maybe they don't like being up that super shallow unless there's a alternative reasoning for it. Like, we had that one area where the sand had really dirtied that water to where it had like a foot visibility. Mm-hmm. That'll keep them there. But I don't think they typically want to be in that super shallow water when it's really rough.
Sure. Yep. Yeah, I could buy that. And there are, you know, the fishing conditions were so good and the lake is in such good shape that there were some fishy days last fall where they were not, they did. The ones, like, if it's a real fishy conditions, a general trend for both of us is to look shallow, right? Like, where is, like, the primary feeding location? Because I want to catch them all right now.
Yeah.
But there were some years or some days last fall where, man, we had so many good days back to back to back that, like, they can't just eat nonstop.
Right.
And we both had to make a transition away from the brake line a little bit. Out into some fish that more like scattered pods of fish that were probably loafing, but the water temp was just perfect that we were able to just drift through those and get
a couple bites adrift.
Mm-hmm.
But boy, you can make a heck of a living getting two bites adrift.
Oh man, for sure. And you know, just a few years ago, we would have thought that was a great way to fish in October. And it is, but you know, one possible, it's nice to just be like certain. You're looking at your customer's rod tips knowing one of them is going to go tick. You know, like you're just wondering which one is going to do it.
Who's up next?
Yeah.
But that's tip. I mean, what we're doing mostly is jigging minnows again. Maybe, you know, if we're trying to catch a bigger fish, we'll be pulling a red tail. Mm-hmm. But almost everything is I would say everything is minnow related in that time.
And we talked about this on the phone not too long ago. On some of those tougher days in the fall, where it wasn't just lights out, like we both did some experimenting with the summertime stuff, right? Mm-hmm. With pitching a bobber on top of them, with pulling spinners on them. And it didn't work that good.
Didn't work.
So it wasn't like, oh, they're not that hungry. I bet they'll eat a nightcrawler. Your bites were still going to come on a minnow. You were just going to get less of them than you did
when things were just didn't have a choice about what you were not getting bit on.
Right. All right, and then this slide, it just says after, because the last few years, you know, MEA weekend is sort of a benchmark where most guys are done. They're putting the boat away. There's a lot of other fun things to do. Family life is getting busy. Kids are back in school, blah, 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 all that stuff. But there's the last 3 years I've had some real good times, mostly by myself or mostly with buddies in November, fishing pretty close to Pikedale. Now, last year we did pretty darn good late under pretty crummy conditions. You know, it was like just not comfortable conditions, but fishing was pretty good. And that was true through the middle of November. I kind of think that'll be more and more true. And, if you're a real diehard walleye angler, man, just not saying you have to put it, you know, you have to go for sure, but I would sure keep yourself able to go if the conditions allow. And, Pikedale's a great place to get on some walleyes without having to beat yourself up.
Too much. One thing you don't think about is you don't want to be driving across lake in November, with a tiller boat.
Yeah,
just because it's pretty chilly.
Well, that's a good time to break stuff too. Right. Just ask Carl. He used to love those late
him November. And Johnny Mac.
Yeah,
breaking trolling motors.
You're maybe a little less cold than I, but you still your trolling motor's still broken because of your decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's all we got. We're about at an hour for this one. You all who are listening to this, if there's any. Upside to not being at Pikedale in person is this is probably more information than we're going to cover at Pikedale, because if we talk at those folks for an hour, we're going to get bananas thrown at us.
But they're gonna give us questions too that we don't have on our slides, and
right,
the slides are law. You have to follow the slides.
We don't have any firm plan for a podcast throughout the season. Don't know what that's going to look like. Just like the last few years, we're focused on catching fish and being good dads at the same time. If you want to go fishing with us sooner, the phone
I
call.
Still have October 4th and 5th open. So if you'd like to book the October 4th and 5th, give me a call.
Yeah. I always tell people, like, if you're worried about your date, as soon as you know when you're going to be up here, contact me. Because, like, I think both of us are at the point where June's not completely booked, but it's pretty booked.
It's pretty booked.
And I even looked at August the other day, and I had to give some dates out to August, and there was for people for August, and I had 4 dates for what they were trying to do.
Wow.
So some of that's life stuff, right? You know, mm-hmm. You try to get away with the family a little bit. But if you know when you're going to be up here and you'd like to go fishing with us, let us know sooner rather than later.
Thanks for listening, and if you've got any questions, well, you'll have to wait probably another 6 months before we do another podcast.
You can always email us. Yeah. Send us a message.
Yeah, especially this time of year, I'm pretty good about getting back to people. I enjoy the questions.
Right.
Gets me back thinking about it. So.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, folks.
Thank you.